Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The WikiLeaks document dump may not have revealed any big truths we hadn't already read in the papers or guessed at on our own. It did expose frank opinions, honest feedback, and seamy deals with the world as diplomats find it. It's compelling to read the unvarnished cables with their flashes of truth instead of the usual spin and shading. There may be public good here, but can the world work when there are no secrets? This hour on Point, diplomacy in the age of WikiLeaks. You can join the conversation. What matters more to you? Freedom of information, any and all information, or letting diplomats do what they do to operate in the real world? Does this country, does the world come away stronger by having all the embarrassing words exposed or not? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Let us know your city and state when you comment online. Here's former Assistant Secretary of State Jamie Rubin talking yesterday on NBC's Morning Joe. Rubin stressed the point that transparency can be detrimental to diplomacy with Joe Scarborough.
Let's face it, the State Department, in the end, has only one thing different than others in the U.S. government. It has relationships between the U.S. ambassador or the Secretary of State and foreign leaders. And if those relationships are destroyed, the basic functioning of the State Department, whether you like our policy, don't like this one, don't like that one, it can't operate if other governments don't trust that they can tell us something without reading about it in the New York Times.
Jamie Rubin yesterday. Joining us now from Princeton, New Jersey is Barbara Bodine. She spent more than 30 years in the U.S. diplomatic corps, serving as ambassador to Yemen. At the time of the bombing of the USS Cole, she served as deputy chief of mission in Baghdad in the years before the 91 Gulf War, and again as first coalition coordinator for reconstruction after the fall of Saddam Hussein. She is now diplomat in residence at the Woodrow Wilson School of Public and International Affairs at Princeton University. Ambassador Bodine, welcome. Thanks very much for being here.
Hello, Tom. Thank you.
And from New York, we're joined by Leslie Gelb. He's done it all in a long career, now president emeritus at the Council on Foreign Relations, a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. He was assistant secretary of state for political military affairs in the 1970s. And pretty relevantly for this discussion, he directed at the Defense Department the research, writing, and dissemination of documents that came to be known as the Pentagon Papers after they were leaked by a certain Daniel Ellsberg. Leslie Gelb, thank you very much for joining us today.
Sure.
Barbara Bodine, Leslie Gelb will talk about what's revealed in these documents. But first to you, Ambassador Bodine, what about diplomacy in this digital age when anything that's in digits can suddenly be public? I mean, how do you see the balance of public good in transparency and damage to perhaps important diplomacy in revelation?
I think there does have to be a balance between full transparency and a level of diplomatic candor. Very few of us operate in a fully candid world, even in our personal relationships. But the role of the diplomat is to build those relationships. I think Jamie Rubin was absolutely right. And to be able to do it with candor and confidence and be able to transmit both the candid assessments and the candid views of our interlocutors around the world. But the diplomats also need to be able to express their own views, their own opinions, their own assessment with full candor. And I think this level of transparency, even calling it transparency, puts too high of a gloss on what happened. This was really almost closer to cyber vandalism.
Cyber vandalism? What word do you put on it, Leslie Gelb? I mean, Secretary of State Clinton used the word attack yesterday.
Yeah, well, I put on it the words gratuitous stupidity. I can't see any redeeming value in these leaks. They weren't leaked. These papers weren't leaked to try to help solve problems. And they certainly won't help solve any of them. They'll hurt. And they weren't leaked to illuminate how the government works. You know, basically, anybody who follows government understands what Barbara Bodine just said. They were leaked for the purpose of showing that the United States is an evil power doing evil things in the world, Julian Assange is pretty clear on that point. And anyone who thinks this isn't going to do damage is either self-delusory or worse. Because just use your common sense. Here, if you're a foreign leader, you find yourself now having your confidential conversations quoted in a newspaper. Is that going to affect how your candor in speaking to the American diplomat in the future? Obviously, it will. If a diplomat is making an honest assessment of a foreign leader and that's leaked, is that going to affect his or her ability to, or willingness to put this down on a piece of paper and a cable? Of course it will.
But let me ask you, if I may, Leslie Gelb, I mean, you were there assembling what became known as the Pentagon Papers about the Vietnam War and missteps there once they were leaked, but you were assembling them in the Defense Department. I think, if I read correctly, you originally thought that that was something like gratuitous stupidity, but
yeah,
changed your mind. What about here?
I did change my mind 2 or 3 years later, as I told your producer,
mm-hmm.
largely because I didn't think they damaged U.S. national security. You know, basically, this was a look into the thinking and the assessments of the Pentagon during the course of the war. And it kind of startled me when Ellsberg leaked them. But years later, you know, I didn't think they did any damage. Did I think it was wrong to leak them? Yes. Did I think he didn't accomplish his stated purpose of putting an earlier end to the war? Absolutely. By the time he leaked them and the Times published them in June 1971, the war was almost over. We had most of our troops out already. So I think a lot of that was just baloney.
Barbara Bodine, speaking of the Pentagon Papers, here's Daniel Ellsberg, and he was talking with Larry King last night. He's got a different view of what's going on now. Of course, he was, at the heart of leaking the Pentagon Papers. Now he's looking at Julian Assange's leak or dump or whatever you want to call it, and he's defending it. He's saying the Iraq war was a case of blatant aggression. The escalation in Afghanistan, this is Daniel Ellsberg, he describes as foolish, unwise, reckless, irresponsible. And he says this, Ambassador Bodine, he said, whatever Assange did or will do in the rest of his life, or Bradley Manning, that's the Army private suspected of having leaked it, can't compare in the recklessness and irresponsibility of these administrations. They're talking about Obama and Bush in getting this country into those two wars, Ambassador.
Well, I'm not surprised that that was Daniel Ellsberg's position on this. I think it's important to note that Sergeant Manning and WikiLeaks, this was not a targeted leak. This was not an effort to expose what he's describing as the mistakes that got us into Iraq and Afghanistan, and that's mm-hmm. an entirely different set of conversations. This is 250,000 cables from all over the world. They're not issue-specific. They're not directed at a particular policy. They're not trying to illuminate a decision-making process. It's just a scattergun approach. I think it's also important for people to understand that the conversations, the confidences that are betrayed here and are going to be chilled in the future are not simply the ambassador talking to a head of state. That is certainly a core element of diplomacy, but it's not all of it. We talk to opposition leaders. We talk to human rights activists. We talk to academics. We talk to journalists. We talk to business people in order to get a whole picture, a complete picture of what is going on in a country. What are the dynamics of their decision-making? What are the dynamics of their views of the United States? And all of these conversations have now been called into question. So it's not just a couple of world leaders who may have been described in unflattering terms, but it's a betrayal of confidences across the board and up and down societies.
Ambassador Bodine, you've described this as having a chilling effect on people within the American diplomatic service, their willingness to stand up and, I think in your words, sort of speak truth to power back in Washington about what's really going on in the field.
Yes, and that is another element of this. I mean, one of the roles, the values of the value of having diplomats in the field is to be able to candidly assess, critique our own policies. Washington, this is what your goal is, but how you're going about it is not going to work or may even be counterproductive. And you need your diplomats, the people on the ground, to be able to speak with full candor and full confidence back to Washington about how they see the policy. We're not simply transmitters from Washington to the host government or the host society, but we're analysts of that policy. And if we cannot speak candidly going back without it being all over WikiLeaks, then I think you're going to have a chilling effect on the ability of diplomats to be able to speak truth to their own power structure.
Leslie Gelb, we've just got a minute before the break, but can diplomacy be effectively done? I mean, it could be WikiLeaks or somebody else. We are in the digital age when things are very easily transmitted, even secret things. I mean, is diplomacy going to change?
There are leaks all the time, and sometimes the leaks are helpful to the public debate. Sometimes they're harmful. But this is really different. This is a massive and gratuitous outpouring of all private communications, without any discretion or judgment whatsoever. It's a very different case. And, you know, Ellsberg's line that this reveals the truth now about Iraq and Afghanistan, it just doesn't hold water, because unless I've missed something, I didn't see any cables leaked regarding those two wars.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about diplomacy in the age of WikiLeaks and the risk of instant digital exposure, asking, can diplomacy be done without secrets? Ambassador Barbara Bodine is with us from Princeton, New Jersey. She was U.S. ambassador to Yemen right up until 2001. Many other diplomatic positions over a three-decade career there. Leslie Gelb is with us, former journalist, Pulitzer Prize winner, president emeritus now of the Council on Foreign Relations. He helped put together the Pentagon documents that, when leaked, became known as the Pentagon Papers. Lots of revelations there about the Vietnam War. We're going to hear in just a moment from a top-flight investigative journalist. Get his thoughts here today. But first, a call. New York, Niskayuna, New York. Beth, you're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to make three quick points, since I guess I fall into that delusional category your guest mentioned. Number one, this is small potatoes, what's been disinformation out there. Two, I think as a taxpayer, having had almost every male relative of mine going back generations, being either in the military or the police or both, and I think WikiLeaks should be putting out information about the torture sessions, and not what they say, but their actual notes on the front page of every single newspaper in this country, and the names of the torturers, and the psychiatrists and psychologists who are there to make sure that those being tortured don't die. Because I'm paying for it, and if it was a cop doing something like this in this country, you know they would be in trouble. I don't mean that you, Tom.
Yeah, okay.
And then my third point is that the third issue about protection, I won't discuss. We'll just say that if I knew information about something horrible happening and I were to speak to a reporter about it, I know that I am more likely to stay alive if my name is in the paper, and that if it is that dire and I'm speaking to the police confidentially, it is their job to make sure I stay alive.
But let me ask you, Beth, what if you're a head of state somewhere or a high-ranking official in some other country, and who you're speaking to is an American diplomat? You tell them something important in what you think is confidence, and then your comments and your name are all over the world in a WikiLeaks leak. Do you see a problem with that or not?
Well, I think that there's two points to that. One, there's a problem within the military. The military is if someone is giving this information out, there's two things. I would say that diplomat probably, I hate to say it, they probably intended that. Anytime I say something to somebody else, I have to be careful, because I know odds are you can't count on anybody to keep a secret. And I ought to know that if I am telling them something, I ought to make sure it's something I'm proud of.
Well, okay, we've got it. Beth, I appreciate your call. Ambassador Bodine, let me bring to you maybe the heart of that, where Beth is saying, look, if torture, for example, is being done in my name as an American, I want transparency there. There's the urge for more transparency, you know it from the public, to know and thereby to keep things right and good.
Well, I think that there's an important distinction between the public's right to know, freedom of the press, and transparency. And those are all extraordinarily important values and cornerstones of our system. And, you know, what Mr. Gelb has referred to as gratuitous information. These WikiLeaks were not designed to expose a particular policy problem. They were not targeted on torturers or the, you know, as I said, the process of getting into the war in Iraq. This was almost the equivalent of somebody getting a hold of your diary and reading it on the PA system in high school, where all of your private thoughts and all of your private comments. Another analogy might be someone who is a marriage counselor, where you listen to the issues on both sides and you're trying to bring the parties together. You need the full confidence of both sides of that, both sides of that relationship in order to find the common ground and resolve the issues. If you were to betray confidences, your ability to operate as a good broker, as a mediator, would be completely destroyed. So I think there's a difference between transparency and the public's right to know and something along the lines of WikiLeaks, which is just this gratuitous, wanton dump of unvetted information simply for the sake of doing it.
Ambassador Bodine, Leslie Gelb, stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation Mark Hosenball, award-winning investigative reporter for many years with Newsweek, before that with NBC Special Reports, now for the news agency Reuters. He's been covering the WikiLeaks story. Mark Hosenball, thank you very much for being with us.
Excuse me. Thanks for having me.
So you're an investigative reporter. Your job is to uncover what the public needs to know. When you look at the WikiLeaks, call it what you will, dump, what do you see at play here? I mean, the public's right to know, gratuitous information, what?
Well, I see all of the above. I mean, I do see that there's a gratuitous element of this. On the one hand, these are not the most sensational documents that I've ever seen. They don't, as the diplomats just said, reveal some amazing lies or scandals in American foreign policy. In fact, arguably, they show American diplomats doing their jobs rather candidly and rather well, and I guess the public has the right to know that. There are certainly elements in these documents that are, to my mind, newsworthy. For example, and you know, this is part of my Anglophilia, but there's some very interesting cables in there about the activities of Prince Andrew, one of the sons of Queen Elizabeth of England, going around and hanging around with dictators and denouncing everybody except England. And the guy's kind of a boor, and he hangs around with not very nice people. I guess
is that important?
People might have a no. I don't know that it's particularly important. It's interesting. It's newsworthy. There was certainly some elements of the previous dumps from Iraq in particular, where the material did establish a certain level of civilian casualties that the American government hadn't admitted to, that I thought was newsworthy. On the other hand, yes, there is a gratuitous element to this dump. The person who I think is doing most of this stuff, Mr. Assange, is not necessarily a very thoughtful or even very reputable person. And, you know, there's an element in here from what I can tell about him wanting to become a celebrity and attract attention to himself, which is not really a good motive, you know, for whistleblowing. On the other hand, any of us in the journalism profession who have dealt with whistleblowers over the years, and I've dealt with one or two, you know that they tend to be rather problematic personalities, difficult people, you know, have an agenda. And, you know, you have to filter that out. Also, of course, in this case, you have media organizations, some of them overseas, that do have an America-bashing agenda. So it's kind of a perfect storm, if you'll excuse the cliche, of malice, celebrity, attention-getting, and, you know, the access to information made available through the mechanisms of the Internet that weren't available in the days of the Pentagon Papers that have come together to create this situation that is in its own way unprecedented, but perhaps only a forerunner of much more serious things to come.
So you're drawing distinctions down through this. On the other hand, the very format of what WikiLeaks does is the dump, by and large. What's your bottom line? Is this valuable as an investigative reporter, as a journalist? Is this a valuable public service? Is this a disaster, as I've seen it described by diplomats?
Well, I mean, my interest is in getting information to the public. So, I mean, from my point of view, once it's out there, to my mind, journalists have to look at it and see what's in there and go through it. I mean, if it was made available to me privately, which is the way some of this stuff started a little bit, I would probably be much, much, much more careful in the way I dug through it. I analyzed the information, I collated the information, I assembled the information, and then I checked it out before I wrote stories about it. But that's not the way it is. So, you know, given what it is, you have to look at it. I certainly wouldn't be the sort of person to go around supporting somebody like Mr. Assange to do this stuff, because I don't find him a particularly trustworthy individual. But if he does it, you know, can a journalist... And there's some newsworthy material in there. Can a journalist turn a blind eye to it? I don't think so.
Let's go to Dubuque, Iowa, and Bryce. Bryce, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you, Tom. You know, I find the whole thing almost an act of treason. I think this whole thing is ridiculous. I think that, you know, anymore everybody thinks, well, this isn't somebody trying to save the world here, trying to say, well, let's have, you know, some transparency. This is a very irresponsible individual who I think should, you know, in essence, be brought up on charges. I think this stuff leaking out, first of all, does he think it's going to become more transparent as a result of this? Now, if he thinks there's an act of secrecy going on, he hasn't seen anything yet.
Oh, that...
No one's going to leave a paper trail. Nobody's going to do anything in writing. It's all going to be under the table behind closed doors. Secondly, what it does is it spurs other people, you know, guests just said, there's an agenda here. And what it's going to do is it's going to cause other people in the future to say, you know what, I don't like the corporation I'm working for. I think I'm just going to go ahead and put their entire marketing plan or business plan online just to teach them a lesson. I think there needs to be some accountability here.
But interestingly, I mean, that is kind of where we're heading technologically. That is so possible now, so easy. We'll talk about whether security and what information security can possibly keep up with it if you think it's a bad idea. Bryce, let me hold those right there and get one more. Myrna, Nashville, Tennessee. Myrna, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
My question, it sort of speaks to your last caller. I'm wondering, how did these documents even become accessible? How did they get out? And why, if this were a government employee, say, selling these documents to another government, that person would be up on espionage charges at this point. So why, what's the next step? How do we prevent it? And why isn't, you know, WikiLeaks being brought up on charges?
Myrna, thank you very much for that. Leslie Gale, let me come to you with these. You hear our caller from Iowa saying this looks like treason to him. And Myrna wondering, you know, are there charges coming? As to how it got out there, the suspicion, of course, is that it's from the Army private out in the field who just tapped into a much more open American information base since 9/11 and downloaded all this, first on a CD, you know, with this Lady Gaga written on it, and then on a little flash drive. But first on characterizing this, do you see the Department of Justice, Mr. Gelb, says they're going to go after this. Do you see treason here? Do you see a crime? What about that kind of characterization?
Well, they have arrested this private. He's in jail.
Mm-hmm.
They prefer charges against him. Whether they will go up to the level of treason, I don't know. But he will be tried, and I will bet he goes to jail. Now, how did a private get access to all this?
Mm-hmm.
Well, as you can imagine, the Pentagon set up a communication system used by the State Department and others that was just absurd. It went out to somewhere between, it's hard to figure it out exactly, somewhere between 300,000 and 800,000 individuals. And it wasn't terribly secure. And the State Department, unfortunately, signed on to this system some years ago and opened itself up to this kind of access and leaking. But now, finally, they're doing something about it. Now, I should also point out that if you look hard at these cables, you'll see that they are not of the highest level of secrecy. That mm-hmm. is, they are not at the level of what's in the government called NODIS, or no distribution, which are the most sensitive cables. So if you labeled your cable anything other than NODIS, it went into this system,
mm-hmm.
and this private was given access. Now, that is Assange legally culpable? Well, the question is he liable under our law, under American law? He's an Australian. Can we charge him and try to get him extradited? We could. But I don't expect that's going to be very easy, whatever the extent of his crimes.
Ambassador Bodine, mm-hmm. What about trying to lock this up again? Can it be locked up in this era? And this, you know, there was the big effort after 9/11 to have more sharing of information. I found myself wondering here, Leslie Gupp says, you know, this went into a Pentagon system. If this, there was a time when the Pentagon was so large and in charge around the Iraq war. I mean, was this Donald Rumsfeld sort of browbeating the State Department into sharing everything?
Well, I think, first of all, I'm pleased that the conversation has moved over to the person who fomented the original leak, if it was Sergeant Manning. But I think that
Private Manning,
mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Private Manning, he is the one who is ultimately culpable in this, for having transferred all of these documents over to WikiLeaks. And I think that probably charges will be brought against him. The bigger problem that you raise is the vast dissemination of information. I don't think we can put this at Donald Rumsfeld browbeating the State Department, but it does reflect the desire, the policy decision to break down the information silos following 9/11. But we went way to the other extreme. What the 9/11 Commission was talking about was making sure that information was shared across agencies on issues where people in the various agencies needed to know it. And what happened was a system that just anyone could tap into. I think what is going to happen, since we will have to reestablish confidentiality and we will have to reestablish the ability to speak candidly, both to our own government and with other governments and people outside government, is that you're going to have a vast tightening up of distribution. And I think the idea that State Department cables were even available to a private out in Baghdad, that simply won't be possible in the future. So I think that there's going to be a vast readjustment of distribution authorities, and the Pentagon's going to have to look very carefully at who they allow access to these kinds of systems.
Mark Hosenball, you know, I can hear when diplomats say, how do we do our important work with this kind of revelation all around us? On the other hand, when you talk about a vast tightening up, as an American citizen, then I begin to fear, am I going to know what's going on? There are insights here that I found very interesting. They may be damaging to our diplomacy, but as a citizen, I feel like I've got a little better take on what's been going on in the world. There's a vast tightening. Is that good, Mark?
Well, of course, the vast tightening is not good, and it's not necessarily good for the government either, because then you get back into this situation with what they referred to, the diplomats just now referred to as silos or stovepipes, so that people in the government who need to know things don't necessarily know things. Or, as we had in the run-up to the Iraq war, with inaccurate information or skewed information or mm-hmm. biased information being given to policymakers by other policy people, like the cell at the Pentagon that was monkeying with the intelligence purporting to link Saddam Hussein to 9/11, that goes to top policymakers and they get the wrong information, or they can go out and gull the American public. So, you know, there are risks there, yeah.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about diplomacy in the age of WikiLeaks and the rise of the risk of instant digital exposure. We're asking, can diplomacy be done without secrets? Here's Secretary of State Hillary Clinton at a press conference yesterday criticizing the release of hundreds of thousands of confidential diplomatic cables by WikiLeaks.
Disclosures like these tear at the fabric of the proper function of responsible government. People of good faith understand the need for sensitive diplomatic communications, both to protect the national interest and the global common interest. Every country, including the United States, must be able to have candid conversations about the people and nations with whom they deal.
Secretary of State Hillary Clinton speaking yesterday, not happy about this. She called it an attack by WikiLeaks. We've been joined by Leslie Gelb, President Emeritus of the Council on Foreign Relations, been high in the State Department, the Defense Department, journalism with a Pulitzer Prize, former U.S. Ambassador to Yemen, and much more in diplomatic service. Barbara Bodine joins us from Princeton, New Jersey, and investigative journalist Mark Hosenball, big, long history himself in investigative reporting. Alex is calling from Boston. Alex, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty well. What do you think?
I actually think that some of these assumptions that Assange should be brought up on treason charges are absolutely ludicrous. And I think that, you know, what he did with this dump, the majority of it, the vast majority of it, were things that the public already knew, had been widely reported on, or were just, you know, a matter of public opinion as far as, you know, the president of Italy, Berlusconi, parties too much, and Muammar Gaddafi is odd. Like, we knew these things. And I think that this whole idea that it was an attack on the United States is sort of the United States' selfish mentality. The governments of the world as a whole have all been served an embarrassing helping of truth, you know, almost equally. And I don't know why it would change anything to know that the Israelis and Palestinians talk to each other in an almost friendly way behind closed doors. Of course they do. Or that Saudi Arabia is, you know, appropriately concerned about Iran's nuclear program. Why shouldn't they be? And they should speak candidly about it, as Hillary Clinton said, to the public. They should be speaking candidly about it. And I think that it's possible that these leaks might even serve to help diplomatic relations in other parts of the country, with the exception possibly about the revelation that China is losing patience with North Korea. That might be problematic, but the rest of them, I don't see that it's all that to make a huge fuss about.
So put it out there, you say, Alex. You know, it's basically things that we kind of understood in our gut anyway. Ambassador Bodine, what do you say?
Well, I think that Alex has a good point that much of what at least has appeared in the press from the WikiLeaks is known. You know, certainly Berlusconi's personal habits were well reported. I think that the difference is when you're looking at both the Wiki, whether or not the head of WikiLeaks should be brought up on charges or Manning should have the list of indictment on him expanded, is the malicious intent. And this kind of goes back to, you know, I originally referred to this as vandalism. The intent was to damage. The intent was to undermine our ability to operate. And I think that that's an important point. There are other elements in some of those cables that are more damaging. And it is simply the fact that it has been, it betrays the confidences of these conversations. It's one thing that if this is in the New York Times as a regular newspaper piece, it's another thing if you are reporting the candid conversation or the candid assessment of your diplomats in the field and their private conversations with these leaders and with others in countries. So I do think that there is a qualitative difference here.
But is there a way, I mean, do you imagine that it may be possible that diplomats have to get used to this? I mean, there are flash drives and CDs and, you know, internet lines running everywhere today. Is it possible that it won't be doable to keep all this private?
On one level, you always operate on the assumption. I was told as a junior officer, you know, to always assume that whatever you are doing or saying will end up on the front page of the New York Times. And that was not to chill candor, but just to instill a certain level of prudence and judgment into a junior officer. But I think, you know, that was a different kind of leak, as Mr. Gelb has explained. If we could do everything in open doors, you wouldn't need the diplomats in the first place. And very few relationships operate on the level of candor, the level of indiscretion. This isn't candor. This is indiscretion that the WikiLeaks revelations put on the table. I think it is qualitatively different.
We've got a little tape here of the WikiLeaks founder, Julian Assange, very controversial right now, been lying low since the release of this huge body of documents to the New York Times and others that are now little by little coming out. He spoke to journalists yesterday via a mobile phone video filmed in what appeared to be a hotel room, people thinking he's in the UK. This is courtesy of Britain's Telegraph newspaper.
Fortunately, there are still good people in the US government. And some of those good people want to see things go the other way, and they're willing to step forward to give us material to help us do that and to give some other journalists similar material as well.
Leslie Gelb, what are you thinking when you hear that? Julian Assange may want celebrity, but he seems to have a bigger agenda, too, to leverage this information against what he sees as you know, bad policy. Have we ever seen anything like this before, Leslie?
No, we haven't seen anything like it before. As I said, the Pentagon Papers were essentially documents within the U.S. government.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't communications between us and other governments, except for the negotiating chapters. Here, these are almost all communications back and forth between governments. And obviously, some of them are trite and obvious and well-known. But most of them are not. Most of them are quite damaging. You want to be able to talk to senior Chinese diplomats and find out their thinking on Korea, because their thinking affects matters of war and peace. It's not just a newspaper joke, and it's not something we knew about. We didn't know about Chinese, or at least thinking in some Chinese quarters, about their own worries about North Korea. In fact, if you look at what's been published in the last 6 months, almost all the articles say there's been a warming between China and North Korea. We didn't want to remove the cover from the head of Yemen when he's telling his people, I'm shooting at the Al-Qaeda people in Yemen, and this cable discloses that, you know, we're doing it. We remove his cover. The cover is good for him, and it's good for us. So these aren't trivial things.
But Daniel, you may be bugged to hear the name Daniel Ellsberg again, but talking with Larry King last night, he was saying, look, when the head of Yemen is revealed to be lying to his own people about who's shooting in Yemen, and the U.S. is complicit in that, that's also the American government lying to Americans about that. Is that a problem, Leslie Gelb, or not?
No, it's good. The objective in conducting foreign policy is not always to expose the truth at the expense of doing things that are really sensible, good, and necessary. We want to be able to go after al-Qaeda in Yemen. The head of Yemen wants to do the same thing. But when you take away his cover, it makes it difficult for him to do it. You know, in the perfect world, nobody would do bad things to begin with, so you wouldn't have to expose them by leaking cables. I don't understand the logic at all.
Let's go to John in Des Moines, Iowa. John, you're on the air.
Whatever happened to the diplomatic pouch? I just think technology is a big part of this problem. I think there's too many people that have access to this information. I realize that they encrypt a lot of this stuff as far as other countries getting hold of our communications, but bottom line, there's just too many people that have their nose into this information. There's just so much of it out there. And, you know, when I sit down at the computer the last couple of years,
yep,
I have a little post-it note that says, if you don't want the whole world to know what you're doing right now, don't do it.
Yeah. John, we hear you. What do you say on that front, Mark? I mean, is it possible that we'll go back to diplomatic pouches and wax seals and direct face-to-face, you know, communications, call the diplomat in to all the way, you know, from wherever they are to Washington to relay whatever they know?
Well, of course, we do that anyway already. And, of course, remember the classes of information that is leaked to WikiLeaks here is only kind of basically field reporting, both in terms of the military documents and in terms of the diplomatic cables. This is routine reporting. This is not the most sensitive material available to the U.S. government. None of this stuff is classified above secret. And while, in fact, the WikiLeaks dump does actually reinforce one's faith, perhaps, that the government is properly classifying stuff, some of this stuff that's considered confidential in the WikiLeaks material, you know, probably ought to be confidential, but it shouldn't necessarily be top secret. Nonetheless, you know, the top secret stuff we're not seeing here. Intelligence secrets we're not seeing here. Nuclear weapons secrets we're not seeing here. And there is an element of hype, both in terms of the U.S. government's reaction to the WikiLeaks dump and in terms of particularly WikiLeaks' presentation of this material. This is not, as Leslie Gelb says, the Pentagon Papers, but it's not the Pentagon Papers, you know, for a multiplicity of reasons, including the fact that the material is in some ways more routine than sensitive, but, you know, to some extent, as the diplomats say, because of its very routine nature, it's damaging to put it out there, because if routine contacts like this were disrupted, then, you know, the more sensitive stuff would be even more difficult to deal with.
And we're hearing diplomats say today it is disrupted already, that sort of concern, paranoia about candor and where it may land. Matthew in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Matthew, you're on the air.
I haven't read all of these, but I think that there is some good that's come out of this particular dump. And that is, when you read them, one is impressed with the literacy and the balance and the skill of our Foreign Service officers. And I don't think the public knows that, and I don't think the media have done a good job in commenting on the level of quality of that we see in the people who have written these cables, at least the ones that I've read.
Matthew, consider it done. We'll take heart from exactly that, as you say.
Can
right
I
here.
Comment on that,
yes,
please?
Leslie. Yes, please.
Yeah, just briefly. I agree with what the caller said completely. Most of our diplomats really are quite good. But if you ask them, or ask Barbara Bodine,
mm-hmm.
would you like the public to know how smart you are, or would you like to maintain the confidentiality of your communication so that you can do business,
yeah.
The answer is obvious.
Yes, I think we'll consider that clear as well.
I do. How on behalf of my colleagues, I appreciate the kind words.
Great. Matthew in Barrie, Vermont. Matthew, you're on the air.
Hello. I have a comment about being in the military. I've held multiple clearances in for the military, and I've signed my name saying I will not disclose this information. It doesn't say if I have a moral, ethical difference with information. It says I will not. So whoever did this, they need to be brought up on charges. My second point is, if I have a decision to make as a policymaker, if I don't get accurate information from the diplomats that is candid, I might not make the right decision.
Mm-hmm.
So if they can't speak frankly, then you get a sugar-coated comment from them, and it's not as effective.
Yeah, Matthew, I think you'd find agreement with Leslie Gelb and Barbara Bodine right there. Let me get one more, if I may. Vince in Cranberry Common, Vermont. Vince, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, what do you think?
Well, let's see. I guess I just want to put a little context. I think these spasms of disclosure seem to happen when there's a substantial discontent with American policy. And, you know, in the case of the case of Daniel Ellsberg and in the present case, and
mm-hmm.
you know, whether whatever Julian Assange's motivations are, I think it's ends up being an almost inevitable reaction to American foreign policy.
Let us pick it up, Vince. I mean, Barbara Bodine, I have to say, you know, you look out in the world, and it does seem like the U.S. is taking all kinds of blows lately. There's a kind of a Gulliver thing going on here. And here's another, this WikiLeaks revelations that may cut back on candor. People have different opinions on them. They may or may not like U.S. policy, but it does seem that the net effect looks like a diminution of American power and maneuver room.
Well, I think that one thing that almost all commentators have agreed on is that these leaks are going to make our ability to operate in the world much more difficult. And so if you want to, you know, take your analogy that this is a Lilliputian tying down of the giant, then in that sense, you know, he has succeeded, at least for the short term. I think you know, the agenda of WikiLeaks' agenda and the agenda of Private Manning are something that I simply don't know and certainly don't understand. But I don't think I would put them on the same level as Daniel, as the Pentagon Papers. That was a very specific issue with a very specific policy, and as Leslie Gelb has pointed out, was almost entirely U.S. government documents. This is a random attempt to try to just cripple our ability to operate. And, you know, I think the idea that, you know, that there are those within the government who want to go the other way, but go which other way? I mean, these cables covered North Korea, China, Yemen, Europe, the Middle East. Which policy were they trying to get at? What was the reasoning? What was the analysis behind this? So I think this is more of a malicious troll under the bridge than it is a Lilliputian attempt to try to bring down Gulliver.
Well, it certainly changes the climate. One has to wonder if we can ever get back to confidence in secrecy overall. Again, in this digital age, I'm really grateful to the three of you for being with us. Ambassador Bodine, Barbara Bodine, joining us from Princeton. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Leslie Gelb, the Council on Foreign Relations and much more. It's always great to hear from you. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Gelb.
Thank you.
And Mark Hosenball, now with Reuters, investigative reporter there. Thank you very much, Mark.
Thanks very much indeed.
Listeners, thanks for your insights. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.